The Cycling Podcast, in association with RAFA. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee shops, RAFA exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello, Richard.
And Daniel Freeb.
Hello, Richard.
And we're all together. A rare occasion, isn't it?
Our last live Meet Space podcast recording of the year, no?
Where are we, Lionel?
We're in the Soho Theatre in
heart
London.
Of Soho. People usually say the heart of Soho
we're in
Soho.
We're in the left ventricle of Soho.
Daniel, what brings you over to...
Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. It's coming up soon, isn't it? I didn't realise it was next week, Christmas.
Well, you're head down off the front of the bunch at all times, aren't you, Rich? You know, just barreling towards...
You'd have thought I'd notice Christmas looming in that case.
I don't know. You don't really look up at the scenery as it's going by, do you? You're just sort of sprinting off to the non-existent finish line. It'll be 2019 in a minute.
You make me sound crazy, Lionel.
Slightly
crazed. Daniel, you're just back from Mallorca. You were busy last week, weren't you?
Busy boy. Very busy. Didn't even have time to go and really chase the big developing story in Mallorca, Team Sky pulling out, because I had a packed timetable.
Yeah, who were you? Katusha and Red Lotto.
Training camp crawl. Yes, I saw Bora Hansgrohe on Monday. It sounds like a Craig David song. On Wednesday, I was at Katusha. Actually, funny I should mention Craig David, because the last time I've seen Craig David in London a few times, and the last time was around here in Soho somewhere, outside Ronnie Scott's.
Maybe we'll get him on
anyway,
the podcast.
I saw Friday this morning.
Oh, wow.
Wow, I mean, star spotting. That's how close to the heart of Soho we are.
And on Friday, Richard, I was at Red Lotto. And on Saturday, I was at Red Lotto, because a couple of riders weren't available on Friday, so they got me back on Saturday. Do you know where we were? Continuing a theme of celebrity spotting, the Red Lotto training camp was at the Rafa Nadal Experience in Mallorca, and Rafa himself was there. Some of our colleagues got selfies with him. I didn't see him.
Would you have, though? You wouldn't have, would you?
No.
No way. I could not imagine that.
I'm very glad that Lotto Jumbo are going to become Team Jumbo in a matter of days' time, so we can drop this Red
Jumbo
Lotto, Yellow
Visma.
Lotto, Red
Lotto, well.
Yellow Lotto
no?
business. Yeah, we've come to it late, though. We could have done this for about the last 18 months, couldn't we? But
yeah, we've missed a trick there. I was at Yellow Lotto at the weekend. They were wearing their new kit, however. I cannot reveal what it looks like.
Is it not yellow?
I cannot reveal what it looks like. Their presentation's coming up very soon, and everything I was told, everything I learned at the Yellow Lotto camp, I'm sworn to secrecy over. So I learned some interesting things, but I can't tell you them.
When is that information embargoed until?
End of this week, I think. Their presentation, end of this week.
So, but there's a Friends of the Podcast special for 2019 coming on Team Jumbo, is that right?
That is right, Lionel. I very interesting day with them. I was very impressed, actually, by the coaching staff in particular and a lot of the sports science underpinning their preparations for the new season, and all that will be in the Friends special. And I interviewed Stephen Kreuzwick and Primoz Roglic as well. And yeah, they seem like a team that, in the words of Dave Brailsford, who I spoke to yesterday, is going places. That's his observation.
Mm.
So, news roundup, please, Lionel.
Well, we're going to talk about Team Sky in the bulk of this episode, but lots of other things have been going on as well. The 2020 Vuelta a España will start in Utrecht in the Netherlands, and I gather that makes Utrecht the first town to host all three Grand Tours, because the Giro had a stage there in 2010, the Tour started there in 2015, and now 2020, the Vuelta will start in Utrecht. No other towns that you can think of that has had all three Grand Tours? No.
No, I don't think so.
I doubt it.
Someone may correct me if that's incorrect. Talking of the Giro, in 2019, Tom Dumoulin is going to target the Giro d'Italia, of course, a 2017 winner.
For Red Sunweb.
Red Sunweb, yeah, an exciting rebrand to their kit. They've gone from Newcastle United black and white stripes to Sunderland red and white stripes.
I like it. Yeah, I wasn't a fan of their old kit.
I don't know. It's a bit too red for me. I don't like...
A lot of red kits this year. Mm. Red is the new black. Who else is red? Bahrain.
Trek. Bahrain.
Cofidis are white. Cofidis are having their midlife crisis.
Cofidis' new kit looks like somebody's knocked it up on Microsoft Paint. It looks appalling, I'm afraid. I mean, don't call me the sartorial judge of the podcast, but not a favourite for me. Somebody else who's targeting the Giro next year, Simon Yates of Mitchelton Scott, of course, came within a day or an hour and a quarter of winning the Giro in 2018. Won the Vuelta, of course, in this year. Will go back, says he has unfinished business with the Giro. And quietly, the Giro is compiling a pretty impressive start list for next year.
Primoz Roglic as well is weighing it up. That could be his main target next year.
And chaps, was it common knowledge that Egan Bernal is going to be Sky's leader at the Giro? That was
no.
Something that was in David Walsh's piece in the Sunday Times, and I raised an eyebrow at that because I wasn't aware that was going to be the case, but
no, that was
usually has good sources, doesn't it?
That would be interesting. Some really big sponsorship news away from Team Sky. Telefonica, the mobile phone or phone communications giant in Spain, have extended sponsorship of Movistar to the end of 2021. And something that broke just before Team Sky's announcement, by I think our colleague at the Telegraph, Tom Carey, was first to this story, that McLaren, the Formula One team, or the company behind the Formula One team, have signed a deal to become a 50% partner in the Bahrain Merida squad. Now that's really quite interesting, because you do wonder whether, if they'd been aware of Team Sky's change of circumstances, whether they would be more inclined to get involved with Team Sky or not. I don't know.
There's a very strong link with Bahrain, though, isn't there?
Of course, yeah.
I wonder, maybe though they heard our podcast recently where we expressed our ignorance about McLaren and what, you know, whether you can buy a McLaren car, which we did get some correspondence on that. You can buy McLaren cars, quite pricey.
Yeah, bit out of our price range. There was the Track World Cup in London at the weekend. Daniel, I'm sure you were glued to this.
That's not why I was back.
No, okay. Well, lots of gold medals for the British riders. The women's team pursuit has won again. Laura Kenny and Katie Archibald are in that squad. The Hub Watt Bike team won the men's team pursuit with Katie Archibald's brother John in their lineup. Young rider Matthew Walls won the men's Omnium ahead of Elia Viviani, who was third for Italy. And Katie Archibald and Laura Kenny also won the women's Madison.
I've actually got some indoor cycling news. Victor Campenaerts, the red Lotto rider, Lotto Soudal rider, has been weighing up an attempt at the world hour record. We'll hear more from him in a forthcoming episode. However, he did tell me last week that is on hold at the moment because he's got a knee injury and he couldn't actually train with the team at the red Lotto training camp at the Rafa Nadal experience.
Yeah,
because he was mainly in the swimming pool.
He'd been planning to do that in Mexico, I think.
Correct.
Yeah.
Doing some underwater cycling, was he? Underwater cycling.
That actually exists, underwater cycling. Yeah. I was talking to another rider the other day, Marco Halla, who's had a bad injury at Katusha this year, and he was doing a lot of underwater cycling.
And finally, just to interject with a couple of bits of breaking news that came to light while we were making this week's episode, the first of which will no doubt leave our good friend Ciro Scognamiglio of La Gazzetta dello Sport heartbroken, because it's the news that Filippo Pozzato, the peacock of Sandrigo, is retiring at the age of 37. He turned professional in 2000 for Mapei. He also rode for Fassa Bortolo, Quickstep, Liquigas, Katusha, Lamprey, and more recently with Villa Triestina. He won a couple of stages of the Tour de France, one in 2004, the other in 2007. He also won a stage of the Giro in 2010. He was a former Italian national road race champion, very good on the cobbles, winning Omloop Het Volk and the Grand Prix E3. But undoubtedly, the biggest victory of his career was the 2006 Milan-San Remo, which he won with a superb attack in the final kilometre. But the peacock has shed his final feather. He's hanging up his wheels. That is the end of his professional racing career, but he's going to work as a talent scout with some young riders for an Italian development team, and apparently he's going to play roller hockey for a team in the second division of Italy's roller hockey league. Yes, such a thing exists. This is not a hoax, according to Daniel. So the peacock will strut his stuff once again, but at roller hockey instead. I don't know how many wheels a roller skate has in roller hockey. 6 per foot, not sure. Anyway, more wheels than just 2. Another rider whose future has been uncertain for some time is the world cyclocross champion Wout van Aert. He has been involved in a legal battle with his team Verandas Willems,
about breaking his contract because of the team's merger with Roompot. That was a deal that he didn't want to be part of. He had agreed to ride with Team Lotto NL Jumbo from 2020, but things have sped along a little bit, and he will make his first appearance for them anytime after March the 1st, 2019. The team will be known as Team Jumbo Visma for 2019. Van Aert will conclude his cyclocross season and then switch to the road. Remember, he had a very good spring in 2018, finished third in Strade Bianca, ninth in the Tour of Flanders, and later on in the year was third in the European Championship Road Race. So Van Aert's much anticipated transfer to a World Tour team is now very much on the horizon.
This episode is now, from this point on, we're going to be discussing Team Sky, aren't we, who will be sort of coming to an end. Well, they certainly won't be known as Team Sky by the end of 2019. That will bring to an end 10 years in the peloton. In that time, they've had 84 riders pull on the Team Sky jersey. Three riders have been ever-present from start to finish. Do you know who they are, Daniel?
Ian Stannard.
Chris Froome.
Geraint Thomas.
Geraint Thomas.
There we are. They've had 148 World Tour wins in total. Chris Froome won the most World Tour races for them up to date with 35. And Sky pulling out. It could be the end of an era. Well, it is the end of an era.
A community around the world. Stories and films with the most compelling characters. The world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
Thank you very much to our headline sponsor, Rafa. Of course, I mentioned last week that the rafa.cc, that's the website, has Christmas gift guides for men and women. Not too late, I don't think, to order your Christmas gifts from Rafa. There's some really nice items there. I mentioned the Festive 500 clobber, socks and other clothing that you can order, which is very nice. And just the motivation somebody might need on Christmas Day to ride 500 kilometres between Christmas and New Year, which is the challenge that Rafa set every year.
Are you going to do that?
No, I'm not going to do that, Lionel.
Hannah Troop is going to do that. My
is
co-host
she?
On Explore, she's going to try to complete the Festive 500 after a couple of near misses in recent years.
Oh, good effort, Hannah. But no, we're not going to do that. But if you are going to do that, let us know. Maybe we'll include some reports from Festive 500 riders in our first podcast of 2019. That would be nice. Email us, contact@thecyclingpodcast.com with your Festive 500 stories. Now, we mentioned Team Sky, Lionel, and that's the big news. We covered it just briefly last week because it landed on us after we'd recorded last week's episode, and with a bit of trickery, we were able to include a little bit of discussion about it, but we couldn't include Daniel, so we haven't had Daniel's thoughts on Sky's withdrawal. I mean, there's been a lot of chatter about it, obviously. The facts that we know are that this has been a consequence entirely of Comcast taking over Sky, James Murdoch leaving the company. James Murdoch was a real driving force behind the team. Comcast have come in and dropped most of Sky's kind of activities beyond their core business. The one thing they've kept is Pass on Plastic, the campaign that whose logo and message was on the Team Sky jerseys at the Tour de France this year. That's the one thing that survived, but everything else seems to have gone, and that includes Team Sky. So that's not so much of a surprise, but it certainly did catch the team by surprise because they had been planning up to 2024. They had Egan Bernal on a five-year contract, and there was a sense of a kind of new team emerging from almost like a snake shedding its skin, with the old skin being the likes of Froome and Geraint Thomas and Egan Bernal, Ivan Sosa and Theo Gegenhart, maybe Gianni Moscon as well, emerging beneath that as the kind of nucleus of a new team. And so it's an interesting time in the team's history, isn't it? Because, as I mentioned last week, Thomas and Froome will be in their mid-30s by the time the 2020 season comes around. How attractive are they to a prospective new sponsor? But Daniel, any thoughts you have on Sky's withdrawal, anything that you've gleaned over the last week?
Well, there was a fair amount of speculation and uncertainty last week about why the decision had been taken. Some people suggesting it had nothing to do with Comcast's entrance, others saying that was entirely the reason. Without being party to the sort of corporate conversations that have taken place, I thought that looking dispassionately at the kind of hole that cycling and Team Sky and professional cycling have been able to punch and the resonance they've gained with the British public, the UK public, their core audience, well, for this sponsorship at least, had perhaps plateaued. Just you look at things like the TV figures. I mean, this year, I think people may be misinterpreted that a drop-off in TV figures for the TV audiences for the Tour de France. I think a lot of that had to do with the World Cup, Football World Cup taking place. But there's no doubt that professional cycling's audience figures in the UK are not growing exponentially. There isn't a huge sort of latent public audience that's waiting to be discovered and waiting to be converted to professional cycling. I think that has already happened. That I think a lot of the potential audience for professional cycling has already been converted by Team Sky. As far as participation in cycling is concerned, the Sky sponsorship had already achieved an awful lot. Sky sponsorship in all forms of cycling, including the Sky Rides, which I think ended at the end of 2016. And I suppose that was already a sign that perhaps the sponsorship was entering its twilight period. Because when Sky initially invested in cycling, I think it was the end of 2008, they made a lot of the fact that it was a complex project involving various different forms of the sport that were all supposed to be or had to be intertwined for this to be a success from their point of view. And when the participation strand of the sponsorship fell away, then it started to resemble a more traditional sort of sports sponsorship, which was not what they had talked about when they first came on board with the team.
But the interesting thing is that Sky own the team. So, you know, this isn't just a case of a sponsor leaving the sport, is it? It leaves the team itself in a position where the future is uncertain. And because of the level of investment, you can take your figures from various sources, but it certainly looks to be between 25 and 30 million a year across the companies or the branches of the same company that funded the team. That is a considerable gap to plug. Dave Brailsford is kind of the project manager of the whole team, but is not part of Tour Racing Limited, which is the company that owns the team and I presume has the World Tour license. So it's quite an interesting period going to be coming up, because Dave Brailsford looking for somebody to effectively take the team on from Tour Racing Limited. And it'll be interesting to know, as the details kind of come out in the wash, whether it's that license that is up for sale or whether it's the team's whole infrastructure and all of its commitments and liabilities in the form of long-term contracts which are up for sale. Because those are two quite different things, it seems to me.
I mentioned I spoke to Dave Brailsford yesterday. It was off the record. It was just for me to get as much background as possible on this, because I don't think he can really say much at the moment.
He doesn't know, does he?
He doesn't know. I mean, that's the bottom line. He doesn't. There isn't somebody waiting in the wings to take it over. Any conversations that might have started have not advanced very far at all. So there's just a great deal of uncertainty at the moment. But one thing he did say about that, because I thought, you know, will a new sponsor have to take on Egan Bernal's five-year contract? Well, it'll be 4 years. Will they have to take on 2 years of Geraint Thomas? Not necessarily. That's up for discussion, I think. And so, you know, it's still complicated, but there is a possibility that a new team could emerge from the ashes of Team Sky.
Yeah, that's what I was saying, really. Whether or not somebody invests in Brailsford, or whether or not somebody invests in the team as it currently is and the bits of it that will go on beyond 2019. And the other thing is, what does Dave Brailsford want to do? It's very difficult to imagine that he would want to run a cycling team on sort of 60 to 70% of what he's used to. And it's like anything in any sport, isn't it? You couldn't imagine a top football coach dropping down and taking, you know, who's used to sort of managing Manchester City, Manchester United, or dare I say Arsenal, Daniel, dropping down and taking on a smaller club and working within, you know, much more limited means. So in a way, Team Sky, a bit like BMC Racing, they've stretched the boundaries of what it means to run a top World Tour team, what it means to run a team at that level. They've forced everyone to sprint to try and keep up. And now, well, BMC have kind of contracted a bit. We could well see Team Sky contracting a bit. We're in for a really interesting year or two.
Well, you know, BMC is significant. They couldn't find a conventional sponsor to take over the team in the form that it was. You know, they've lost quite a few big riders in joining together with CCC. And it's a really good point. I mean, Jonathan Vauters described the Sky sponsorship as a sort of anomaly in cycling, and that there wouldn't necessarily be a queue of you know, potential replacements. But also he framed it as potentially a positive for the sport, where the sponsors willing to pay, you know, between 10 and 20 million could now have a shot at the big prize, you know, winning the Tour de France, which is the big prize. And so there could be more competition. I mean, we were keen to canvass the opinions of some team managers on this sort of subject. So I spoke to Richard Plug, the general manager at Lotto NL Jumbo. And Daniel, you spoke to a couple of team managers as well.
I did. I spoke to Jose Acevedo of Katusha and Marc Sargent from Red Lotto, Lotto Soudal.
Shall we hear from them now? Let's hear first from Acevedo, then from Richard Plug, and then Marc Sargent.
Bad news for cycling. It was a big project, a big structure. Everybody is thinking, and I was thinking that this team have the stability and they have the sponsor behind. And when you hear after the tour that they signed riders for 3 years, riders for 4 years, so yeah, you always think that this team is gonna stay on the road for many years more. So, and this is important for cycling. So all the teams are important, but of course a team like Sky with this structure, yeah, it's one of the reference at this moment in the cycling, and I think nobody's happy with this news.
Will it have an effect on the whole market, rider market in particular? I mean, maybe a beneficial effect for another team manager.
I'm not happy. Of course, first I hope they can find a sponsor to continue with this team or with this structure. So I hope this is honestly my desire. It's they find a sponsor. If it's the case, they don't find. Of course, it's less teams, more riders in the market, and yeah, it's not a secret. For the managers, you say, yeah, it's better for you to negotiate contracts, but it's not. I'm a manager of the team. I try to see the things thinking like as a person who loves cycling. I think it's not what cycling needs. This situation where now we can think, yeah, maybe we can have a better rider for less money. I think this is not positive for cycling and for the image of the cycling. So cycling now needs stability. Cycling needs to have a strong image, pass for the sponsor that in the sport world we are a good product for the companies invest. And at the end, each one do the team with the budget he have and try to have the best team and the most competitive team.
Oh, for sure. It was a big surprise, like I believe also for the people in the team. But and it's a shame that they will leave the World Tour competition. We are striving and fighting for a stable and sustainable future for cycling teams. And this shows how really difficult it is for teams to survive in the cycling world, where some organizers and the UCI is ruling the world and without thinking too much about cycling teams. And now you see what could happen if they have to really pull out of the competition, because you know it's yeah. I don't know if it's the benchmark, but it's always good to have a team like them to compete with.
Sportingly, though, is there a part of you that also thinks, well, it might be, you know, easier to win the Tour de France in races like that they've had a real stranglehold on? So I guess there's maybe two parts of you. There's the on the business side of cycling, and on the sporting side, a team like yours that's been chasing and maybe closing the gap a little on the team. Do you think it's an opportunity for you to?
Oh, of course, hopefully, but I'd like to see it differently. You know, in every sport, there's always a hegemony of teams, or you know, Mercedes in Formula One now. In football, you see always the same teams in the Champions League, and it's up to the contenders, the guys who are just below that, to fight these top teams and to win from them. And I see Sky also as a you know, how incredible it would be that we could beat Sky, you know. And last summer we did a terrific job, I believe, to make it really difficult for them with our team, and that's what I like, you know. It's and if Sky pulls out tomorrow, then another team will be the biggest team and the strongest team for maybe another 5 years. So, and then in 5 years time we say that team have to go away or something, you know. It's part of sport. If you see Nadal and Federer in tennis, or, you know, it's for 10 years time they're winning all the big big tournaments, and that's part of sport, and it's up to us to fight that.
And you know how it works. I mean, already with the uncertainty over the team and whether they'll continue into 2020, I'm trying to think there, will that uncertainty threaten the unity of the team? And do you imagine that the riders on the team will already be approached by other teams and agents, and perhaps even you are thinking that there are one or two riders at Team Sky that you quite like for 2020?
Yeah, that could be. But I think at the moment, you know, I've been in this position when Rabobank pulled out, and it is really important for Dave, or who is in charge of this, to keep everybody as long as possible together. And in my time, we asked our riders to wait at least until the Tour de France, and give us the opportunity to find something. If he manages to do that, then I think he can still keep the team together. And obviously with the riders he has in the team, I'm sure there will be someone interested, some party interested in stepping in. So I'm not that worried about their future as a structure. But yes, it's a big task for them. You know, there are riders whose contracts are expiring at the end of the year. So we are always looking at good riders.
Sky? Well, I think it was positive to learn from they came from nowhere. You saw straight away it was a beautiful project, because they had everything from the start, and they even built it higher standards. It made other teams, you had to grow also, because otherwise you were blown away. If you wanted to win a GC, you had to pass them.
For example, the fact that now you've got a second manager, John Lelong, I mean, that's also a symptom of what's happened to professional cycling in the last few years, isn't it?
Well, if you were together in the team in the hotel with Team Sky, then you saw immediately the difference between every other team and Team Sky. There were so many people that you said, what's he's doing? What's his role? But for sure they had a role. And they went so far in perfection, I think, that nobody can do that with the budget they have. But they did it, and they proved they were right.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast, team car, the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, race radio at the Tour de France, to remind us to tell you that this episode of the cycling podcast is sponsored by Harry's Razors. And all listeners to the cycling podcast can get a trial set for £3.95. That's basically the cost of delivery, by going to harrys.com/cycling. Rich, as you know, I don't use the Harry's razor. Prefer to just be a bit rough around the edges. But I do really like the ethos behind the company.
My smooth face?
Yeah, I do really like your smooth face, yeah. But I was going to say, I really like the ethos behind the company, because the two guys that set it up, Jeff and Andy, were fed up with having to buy razors at quite a high price, and so they started making their own. And by taking just a little bit less profit themselves and selling directly online, their razors are around half the price of some others. But that's all very well, but how do they perform? It's all very well having the most expensive, or the least expensive, or the best value bike, but it's how it performs out on the road. And I guess it's the same with razors, no?
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been very happy. I mean, thank you to Harry's for supporting the cycling podcast for, well, quite a few episodes this year, and also for keeping me well shaved. I mean, I'm very happy with my Harry's razor. I won't go back. Half the price, double the quality, Lionel. They're very good. With that pack that you can get as a cycling podcast listener, You get everything you need for a close, comfortable shave. A weighted ergonomic handle, 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel and travel blade cover. So you can get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your trial set for £3.95 if you live in the UK. That's at harrys.com/cycling. harrys.com/cycling to claim your Harry's set today. And while we've got your attention, we must tell you that our 2019 Friends program has been launched. You can sign up at thecyclingpodcast.com. And if you want to buy a Friends subscription as a Christmas present, we can arrange that. There are instructions on the website. The first episode is a series of audio diaries from the 3 Grand Tours, the Giro, the Tour and the Vuelta, plus the Women's Tour, done by me, Lionel, Daniel, Francois Tomazo and Orla Chinoui. The Giro audio diary is out now. The Women's Tour is coming, Tour de France and Vuelta to follow. I thought we'd play you a quick excerpt from the Giro diary. Here is Daniel covering an event in the final week.
Within a few minutes, our mild panic has escalated somewhat after we've established that the hire car company has supplied us with the wrong wheel wrench. No one we or the hotel manager can find in reception or the breakfast room has the right one either. The time's ticking, the current best case of a local mechanic getting here in an hour won't get us to the airport on time, and the bus demob jauntiness has gone the way of Simon Yates' pink jersey. So while these pennies are dropping, that a somewhat senior gentleman hobbles out of nowhere and onto the set of our unfolding nightmare. I don't even think we've had time to tell him what's wrong. I've barely opened my mouth before he's producing a multi-miracle tool out of his pocket, squatting by the wheel and prodding and gouging at the bolts. After about 4 minutes, the spare is on and, with a flamboyant swoosh of his right arm, our new friend, the Wheel Whisperer, is waving us out of the pits. Malpensa is 145 kilometers away and we've got just under an hour to get there, with one tyre whose recommended maximum speed is 80 kilometers an hour. We don't make it, but as we arrive at the airport, inspiration strikes, practically poleaxes the buff. I'll head straight to the gate with just hand luggage, he'll take my big suitcase and get it to my girlfriend who's visiting me in a few days. Brilliant, thanks buff, I call over my shoulder as I sprint towards the terminal. If you get stopped and searched at customs, Rich, just try to make sure they don't lift up the insole of my New Balance trainers, okay? Bless him, he suddenly looks even paler than usual.
You know, our payroll was going to double to just keep the top talent in the team. So we were faced with raising dramatically more money and in the competitive environment driven by the rise of the super teams, at the same time selling constantly against doping in the sport. And that just became unworkable. Could we have, we probably could have continued as a smaller team, a less well-funded team. But at that stage, you know, I don't think anybody was interested in making that trade-off where we would become just an average place. After all the success and all the hard work, nobody wanted to do that. And we talked about it openly. You know, if we can't get to a certain financial milestone, does it make sense to continue? And while there were some mixed feelings about it, in general, people didn't want to become just another team. We didn't want to go from number one to number 10. It was just too hard of work to do that.
Well, we're played back in there by the very sort of soothing, calming tones of...
You're friends again, aren't you?
We are, yeah.
Bob Stapleton.
Yeah, we made up at the World Championships in Innsbruck. It was a wonderful moment. anyway, Bob Stapleton. Who's Bob Stapleton, Daniel?
Well, he was the manager, well, the principal. I don't think we called them team principals back then. Of High Road, the team that was also known as or variously sponsored by HTC, Columbia, and team that enjoyed incredible success, particularly between 2008 and, well, when the team folded in 2011 due to an inability, Stapleton's inability, to find a backer to take over from the final sponsor was HTC, wasn't it? And as Bob explained in that clip, to a large extent, that team was a victim of its own success. They had increased the value of a lot of their riders, most notably Mark Cavendish. And they'd gone from being quite a small budget team, so they differed from Sky in that respect. But they became, well, they would have needed to be, a very, very big budget team. And the business environment at that time made it very difficult to to find someone who was going to put in probably the $15-20 million that they would have needed. And, you know, I think at that time, as Bob also mentioned in that clip, the specter of doping and scandals was still very much looming. We weren't that far away from the blackest period probably in the sport's history, 2006 to 2008. And that really conditioned every conversation he had with prospective backers. And who knows how much the background noise around Team Sky over the last couple of years might have affected Sky's decision. It sounds like it hasn't at all, but it might affect any future conversations that Brailsford might have with companies.
I mean, yeah, the point Stapleton made really reinforced the point you were making, Lionel, about the difficulties. Stapleton mentioned that they discussed scaling back a bit and operating at a lower level or with a lower budget. And from the outside, you think, why not, you know? but I think it's not in the mentality of, well, anybody actually to, no. You know, you're not going to take a salary cut. You're not going to, if you're, especially if you're Dave Brailsford and you've established this team with this budget and this level of success, I don't think there are any gains for him in coming in with a much lower budget.
No, particularly when the public, which is your main audience, is not necessarily going to acknowledge the fact that you have had to make compromises and is not going to give you credit for that.
Well, also, when if you were saying, well, I'm operating with 30% less money, it works both ways, that, doesn't it? Because people would then interpret Sky's success being down to the level of investment they had. And I think that, you know, this is a really interesting period because you can look at this news as one of two ways. One, a kind of a damning indictment of cycling's business model, that a team that can win Tour de France after Tour de France, that their stated goal to be excellent at winning the biggest race there is, and yet when the team company pulls out, leaves a huge void. There's not, you know, there's a kind of a whistling in the wind, isn't there? It's not like a football club or a major sporting institution which has bricks and mortar and it has tangible things that it can sell. A cycling team really is money in, money out, isn't it? And the money that's come into the big teams, Team Sky, BMC and others, that money has gone straight into increased research and development, more backup support staff and rider wages. It's not like, it doesn't appear to me that many teams have gone, right, well, let's put 20% of our annual budget aside and build up a little fund that creates a sporting team that will endure beyond the current sponsorship.
It's also very difficult always for a sponsor to take over a team. You know, there's always that team remains in lots of people's imaginations what it was, and Sky's ownership of that team will endure beyond their sponsorship in a way. And
so you mean,
you know, Lionel, you'll still be calling them Team Sky in 2020, yeah. Maybe 2021 for sure. But that's I'm sure uppermost in potential sponsors' minds.
I think that's possibly an underestimated benefit of sponsoring a cycling team, particularly when they've been a very successful cycling team, that there's almost a residual resonance that you get for years thereafter. You know, every time we talk about the 2014 or 2015 Tour de France in future years, we'll talk about Chris Froome's role in that Tour de France and Team Sky's.
Now, Daniel, you spoke to someone else who's been watching this story with interest from afar, Ian Boswell, didn't you? The Katusha rider who spent 5-6 years at Team Sky? 5 years at Team Sky. Will we hear from him now?
We will.
Real big surprise. I was actually walking to core training this morning. I think Enrico told me that Sky was pulling out. And I thought he was joking. I was like, is it April 1st? But it's not. And I was actually messaging with Teo last night, and yeah, he didn't mention, or like he didn't, I don't think he knew what was happening. That's a shock for really the whole sport. I think if anyone can pull together and find a sponsor, it would be Dave. But if that team does happen to go away, there'll be a huge shift in, I think, the whole pro peloton, and just, you know, budgets and salaries, and, you know, it wouldn't take cycling back to the Stone Ages, but it would definitely change things. I think riders and fans and journalists as well, I guess, love to hate on Sky, you know, because they're an easy target. They're the team at the top, so everyone wants to knock them off. But I think a lot of times riders fail to realize how important they are in the structure of the sport. You know, with the money and the budget they have and the success they have and the influence they have, it would definitely change a lot for a lot of riders. You know, you look at the advancements they brought to the science of it, and also, you know, a lot of riders' salaries are dictated off the price that Sky will pay riders. And like I said, that would really change things. I think you saw, you know, what, 7 or 8 years ago when Sky was just starting and BMC was a team. You know, I was speaking with some management earlier today and how that changed the kind of the playing field of cycling, that all of a sudden, you know, we had these two big budget teams that could pay riders a lot of money. And since then, riders' salaries have just gone up. But without, you know, I don't know what CCC's budget is. And if Sky were to disappear, then I think it would really change the whole kind of playing field of pro cycling.
And you obviously know a lot of the Sky riders well. You see them a lot around Nice. You train with some of them, I think. Pure speculation. Lionel hates speculation. But how do you think it will affect them this season?
I don't think it'll affect the riders that much. I think that they'll put a lot of faith in Dave and in, you know, kind of the management structure over there. And it's the same thing we had in, I'm trying to think, there was some controversy when I was on the team in 2017 around, to be honest, I can't even remember what it was now, but something, I remember we were in Strada Bianchi and people were talking about how it was going to be a distraction in Quijote, then won Strada Bianchi. And last year you look at the Froome case and how that was going to be a distraction, and it obviously wasn't, because, you know, Froome won the Giro and the team was successful all spring. So I think that the team will continue on, and I don't think it will change much as far as their performance goals.
Ian Boswell there, who of course rode for Sky, now riding for Katusha, a team that has a sponsor which really we struggle to understand the kind of message of that sponsor. It's a Russian global sporting project, as was.
And a shampoo, Lionel?
Well, Katusha aren't a shampoo.
Alpecin as a shampoo.
Alpecin is a shampoo, yeah.
Katusha are also a sports clothing brand now.
Now, they have which become. Has spun out. And now they're Swiss registered rather than correct. Russian registered. So, I mean, this is one of the other things we have to bear in mind. Team Sky, sponsored by...
So I was just surprised you weren't familiar with Alpecin as a product.
Low blow. Low blow, that, Richard. No, I don't need it. If there's any kind of head shining wax product that sponsors cycling, I'm straight in there. But Sky has put in a lot of money. It must be, well, it's hundreds of millions over 10 years. They've transformed cycling in the UK, certainly. And when you look back at what their aims were at the start, and what were they trying to do? They weren't trying to sell more satellite dishes or get more people to subscribe to Sky. I remember talking to Chris Haynes, who was kind of corporate Sky, but very keen on cycling right at the start, and for a while was their press officer, up to the point where Lance Armstrong's reasoned decision came out, and some Sky people were implicated in that and had to leave the team. But Chris Haynes always made the point that the team wasn't about just selling a product. It was about more than that.
What was it about? Because when you go back and, well, read the interviews that, for example, the chief executive, wasn't it, Jeremy Darroch, has given throughout the duration of the sponsorship, he always talks in terms of tangible goals for getting a certain number of people on bikes. But sometimes you read and listen to him and you didn't quite know what Sky were getting out of it or what they hoped to get out of it.
I think it was about being associated with excellence. If you think back to 2008-09, when all of these conversations were going on, remember Sky sponsored parts of British cycling first on the track, so they wanted some fingerprints on that Olympic team that of course did so well in the Beijing Olympics. They wanted a bit of Dave Brailsford. Dave Brailsford at the time was seen as a kind of the Venn diagram of sporting brilliance and kind of acceptable corporate business speak, wasn't he? He was the after dinner speaker that everybody wanted to hear from. He represented something about Britain and British sport, and a British sporting scene really in a lot of ways starved of this kind of almost unbroken success. And I think Sky found that very attractive. It gave them something to build towards when the London Olympics were going to be dominating kind of the sporting and cultural landscape in 2012. And it put them inside the ropes where ordinarily they would have been kind of on the outside, because of course in the UK the BBC have the all of the rights for the Olympic sport, and Sky as a sports broadcaster, you know, would very much have been outside the Olympic Park commenting on what was going on inside. But then suddenly they had these really valuable marquee names, Chris Hoy, Victoria Pendleton and so on, that they could, Bradley Wiggins of course, that they could
claim some ownership of.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And yeah. I think that then, you know, when the message morphed more into, you know, the rainforest and then the pass on plastic, I think giving a kind of a softer, more caring face to what is still, in a lot of people's eyes, a Rupert Murdoch company.
Because that was always part of it as well, to detoxify the Murdoch Sky kind of brand at the time.
Given that was probably the case, do you think that the negative headlines that we've seen over the last 2 or 3 years might have compromised the message they were trying to convey slightly? And also, you know, we've had this discussion before, but in terms of the branding and the image of the team, do you think that it fulfilled those sort of goals of corporate responsibility or social responsibility that Sky wanted it to fulfill? You know, just the image of the team, this kind of sinister or robotic, as people have described it, this air about the team, the black, the you know, some of those things don't quite add up necessarily to me.
A lot of people love that. A lot of people love that kind of dominance, that professional kind of unerring pursuit of a goal.
About cuddliness.
No, well, no, but I think you're right. But I think there's two sides to that, and I think it probably did tick boxes for both sides. And I think that you're right, that it became more complicated when you start getting a small but significant minority of people who then think, oh yeah, well, we know how they did it, kind of.
Whether those allegations are substantiated or not.
Whether they're substantiated or not, the fingerprints are inky, aren't they, on the reputation of the team and the organisation and the overall message that they're trying to convey.
But I think, Daniel, you're absolutely right that over the duration of the sponsorship, it did change from starting out, because at the time, if you remember, you know, we're talking, I can't remember the exact time frame, but there was, you know, phone hacking, the closure of the News of the World, was all about around the same time. There was a lot of damage to the Murdoch brand and, by extension, Sky the company. And getting into cycling, you know, a green activity, you know, a small sport with kind of worthy athletes, was certainly, there was an element of it that was about detoxifying, making the company, and making the brand a bit more cuddly.
And could one not argue that instead of detoxifying the corporate image, in the end it was reinforcing the negative connotations that people, associations people made with Sky.
But then also the mission changed from, it did become about an excellent sports team with more investment every year from Sky. Mm-hmm. Remember, you know, the more, again, it goes back to the point about HCC. In this case, there was never any question of them losing riders because they couldn't afford them. If the riders got more expensive, they just put more money in. And that happened with Froome. It's happened with Thomas, Bernal, with most of their riders, to be fair. They've never lost a rider because they haven't been able to afford to keep him.
No.
Maybe Richie Porte, you could argue, but I think Richie Porte also wanted his own opportunities. Mm. So, you know, it became about winning the Tour de France and doing it every year. That's what that became the team's raison d'etre.
And let's not underplay the importance of James Murdoch, who, you know, his infatuation with professional cycling became a deep love, really, didn't it? You know, travelling in the team cars at Paris-Roubaix and the Tour de France, and you know, being in the circles with Dave Brailsford, you know. Just seeing a bit of the world that he'd grown to love. And well, the team's sponsorship from Sky has fallen at the very moment that James Murdoch has left the company.
Absolutely. I think there's another impact that Sky have had. You know, I've spent the weekend with Lotto NL Jumbo, Yellow Lotto, and just being inside that team for 24 hours, you realise the impact Sky have had, frankly, because the training they're doing, the sports science that they're bringing to their training, the nutritionist who was there, who, you know, I mentioned this to you, the riders all had individual desserts with their names on each dessert. Each dessert was a different size according to how much dessert they needed. It was all it was extraordinary, the sophistication, the detail. Now this did not happen a few years ago. Now you could argue that it would have happened anyway, because sports science is becoming more important in all sports. But there's no question that in cycling, you know, Sky brought in a lot of this kind of thinking and these methods when they started.
We get mocked. Everyone gets mocked for saying that.
But
Sky,
the team themselves said it to me. You know, but they have been trying to copy what Sky do.
Of course, they have influenced the way things have gone. I'm not saying that these things wouldn't have happened had Sky not come along and done them. But one thing that Sky did definitely do was they looked at every area, every aspect of training, preparation, racing. Can we do it differently? Why, you know, if they come up with a different solution, you know, why hasn't this been tried before? The things we don't hear so much about are the slightly off the ball, slightly left field suggestions that didn't get implemented. But they definitely looked at all aspects of cycling, training, racing, and the whole lot. And they did kind of innovate, or they did reinvent the wheel in some cases, or they did things that other teams were doing on maybe a smaller level, and they elevated them and made them slightly more important, and they certainly talked about them more, which is, you know, why we kind of have learned about some of their methods. And they've undoubtedly stretched the boundaries in lots of ways. The way that they race the tour was not new. You know, US Postal Service raced it tactically in the same sort of way, with everybody riding for one leader. So that wasn't particularly new. Other teams have tried it. And you know, we see it now, don't we? When anyone wants to challenge Team Sky in a Grand Tour, they try and ride exactly the same way. But that Sky didn't invent that way of racing. But what they have done is they have pushed out the boundaries in lots of little ways. And what's going to be fascinating over the next 6 months, a year, 2 years, is how the rest of the sport reacts to this and what the consequences of Sky's withdrawal end up being, whether the team survives or not. There's going to be a really interesting period of flux, I think.
Well, just on a sporting level, Rich, you know, the term marginal gains has kind of become a bit toxic over the last couple of years. But I think one thing that was massively underestimated and has been a big legacy of the Sky way has been the belief in the placebo effect, and a big placebo effect of talking about, thinking about all of these innovations. I mean, I brought up a quote from something I wrote a couple of years ago after at the end of a Tour de France. Filippo Pozzato, friend of the podcast, said that if we turned up at the start tomorrow and saw the Sky riders eating shit, then the next morning you could guarantee that half of the peloton would be stuffing pieces of shit into their jersey pockets.
which is
an eloquent way of putting it. But that there was definitely a cult, there was a mythology that built very quickly around Team Sky. Whether it was working, that their innovations were working or not, people became interested and became curious and became insecure and paranoid about not doing what Sky were doing. And that has snowballed. And, you know, I think a lot of what you saw at the weekend with Yellow Lotto was probably speaks to that insecurity about, is there an area that we're not looking into that might just have a hold benefits for us? And on a corporate level, I think the other point to make is that sports sponsorship is without wanting to talk about Brexit and Theresa May, but it's a very nebulous area. And it works in ways that we don't necessarily understand as non-specialists in sponsorship. And there are all sorts of different things that companies hope to get from it. One, for example, that was big for T-Mobile in Germany at the end of the 90s and in the noughties was sort of creating a sense of togetherness and team spirit in the company. And regardless of what the wider public thought and the wider world thought, I met up with the former CEO of T-Mobile, Ron Sommer, a couple of years ago, and he said that was one of the main advantages and the main benefits of their corporate sponsorship was it was a huge organization of several hundred thousand people, and the sports sponsorship and their successes in the Tour de France really just created a sense of camaraderie and a sense of belonging and a sense of identity for employees in the company. And from what I've heard, that was also a fairly important role of the cycling sponsorship at Sky.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Yes, thank you very much to Science and Sport for their support of the cycling podcast. Very grateful and very pleased that our two main sponsors, Rafa and Science and Sport, will continue with us in 2019. You can still get 25% off your Science and Sport products with the code SISCP25. That's SISCP25 at the website, scienceandsport.com. That's at the checkout, scienceandsport.com. Use the code SISCP25. Now, this week's question for the Science and Sport experts, a special one. Dear Science and Sport, with Christmas coming up, I wondered whether you could advise on sensible eating strategies. I should point out that I am in good shape for the challenge ahead. I spent May in Italy scoffing pasta, meat and tiramisu. Then in July, I was in France where I gorged on croissants, cheese and cassoulet before heading to Spain to graze on chorizo and jamón. For the last month or so, I've been tapering for Christmas and I'm now in the shape of my life to tackle the turkey and quality street. My question is, should I load up on turkey on Christmas Day or restrict my portion to enable me to enjoy turkey sandwiches in the days that follow? Similarly with Quality Street, do you recommend avoiding the inferior ones like Turkish Delight and coffee creams or eating those first and saving the caramels and fudges until last? Yours in science, Lionel Burney, Not Watford.
Fake news.
Over to you, Ben.
Thanks for the question, Lionel Burney from Not Watford. Great question for this time of the year. Now, it sounds like you've already undertaken some fantastic training to get you to this point, albeit in significantly different climates to the battles that lie ahead versus the turkey and Quality Street. I'm really not sure how much of this year's warm weather training is going to pay off here. Now, with that in mind, my headline message to you would be enjoy, but don't indulge. If you've got time to nap afterwards, then loading up early on turkey could be a good play. But the more effective strategy to achieve that volume of sandwiches over time would be a little and often approach, doing anything you can to avoid the inferior Quality Street as you go. On a more serious note, this time of the year is one to enjoy and celebrate the achievements of 2018 before really getting stuck into 2019. With a mindful approach, it is possible to get a head start on next year through including an element of exercise each day with considered high quality nutrient intake around the session. And then being flexible for the rest of the day, but not aimlessly overeating, will put you in a good place.
Thank you very much for that, Ben. I hope Lionel Burney, Not Watford, listens and takes that advice on board.
Have you hacked my email, Richard? I wanted that bit of advice to be confidential.
Well,
just me and the Science and Sport expert.
Yeah, but we do have lots of real questions as well. Keep them coming. Contact at thecyclingpodcast.com or you can leave a voice memo at our WhatsApp number, which you'll find on our Twitter bio. And thanks to Ben and to Science and Sport. And we're going to hear in a moment or two, unrelated to our sponsorship by Science and Sport, but Stephen Moon, the chief executive at Science and Sport, he got in touch with us after our episode at the Vuelta, our Kilometer Zero on sponsorship and on really what we call the broken sponsorship model. You know, whenever teams lose sponsors or struggle to find new sponsors, we talk about the problems with cycling sponsorship model. And he accused us of being part of the problem in this respect. We talk about these stories and don't necessarily talk about the sponsorships that work and or look at why they work and how they work, as the point that Daniel was just making, really. So we'd been having a bit of a dialogue with Stephen about this. I mean, Stephen's a great, he listens to the podcast, he's a great supporter, and he's got some really interesting views on, you know, his area of expertise, which is business and sponsorship. So I went in to see him just a couple of days after we heard about Sky pulling out of sponsoring Team Sky, because one of the points he'd been making was that their sponsorship of Team Sky had worked very well for them for reasons that owed to Team Sky's commercial department as well as their own, you know, engagement with the sponsorship. So
I think a crucial point on that, Rich, was that Dave Brailsford has often mentioned the fact it was a key advantage of Team Sky to essentially be a subsidiary or be owned by the corporate entity and not to be a completely separate management company which only acted as a billboard for the team sponsor. So they essentially had access to people in Sky's marketing department, in their legal department, in their contracts department, which is not the case of most World Tour teams. It was also the case with another team who were credited with sort of certainly putting a different twist on or revolutionising the cycling sponsorship model, and that was MAPE a long time ago. MAPE were very much an integrated part of the MAPE company.
Well, let's hear from Stephen Moon, who had made some of these points.
The starting point, I suppose, is your feedback to the Calm to Zero episode that we did, which was about what we called, I think, the broken sponsorship model in cycling. And taking this very traditional view of sponsorship being about putting a name on a jersey and how that didn't seem to be working anymore. Can you sort of just explain what frustrated you about that program and the kind of arguments that we were putting forward in that?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of threads to that conversation. The first being, I don't think there's an understanding within cycling at any level, whether it be through most of the teams or the administrators, about what a sponsor really wants from a deal. And even now, you know, very well-known figures in cycling think that getting a sponsor's name on the collar of a shirt is something that every sponsor is going to be delighted with, or a random picture of a stage winner on the front of the Gazetta is really what sponsors are looking for, and that's simply not the case. Our business spends about, next year we'll spend around about $6.5 million on marketing altogether, and within that, sponsorship's a crucial part of it. We're partners with Team Sky, we're partners with Manchester United, we're partners with Adam Peaty. So we spread across a number of sports. But the first thing we look at when doing a deal is, what's it going to do for our brand awareness, and can we monetize the deal? And the thing that's really changed, and cycling hasn't caught up with it yet, cycling's still in the world where there's talk of names on shirts, on newspaper covers, or TV rights, in inverted commas. And actually, if you look at the fragmentation of media now, the power of social media, the power of e-commerce, it's just changed the game entirely. And I just don't think cycling's caught up with that. So we're in our third year with Team Sky. We can calculate exactly how many pounds of revenue we've got out of that deal. So for a pound in, we know exactly how much revenue we get out of it. And equally, we know how much brand awareness on the Science in Sport brand has improved through the association with Team Sky. So it's that very precise return on investment, very precise growth in brand awareness that's important to a sponsor. And yeah, the cycling world doesn't get that, and there's a capability, and I've made myself unpopular in some courses. I've had some very acidly worded direct message and emails from people sort of screeching at me that teams can't afford to spend time and money on people developing commercial deals. Well, if you believe that, then we're going down the plug hole. So
are there still people involved in, you know, selling sponsorship, running teams, who believe that they can sell sponsorship on the basis of giving the sponsor a space on the jersey?
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah, I've got to take a breath because I could go off on about a 10-minute rant, and I'm assuming you want me to speak for about 60 seconds in your podcast. So if you show up at Team Sky, you will meet people like Dave Callan and his team, who have who've earned the stripes working for big soccer teams like Man United and Man City, who know how to engage with a sponsor, who know what a sponsor wants, and do that on a day-to-day basis. And being truly honest, they didn't have that capability at the start, but they're savvy enough to realize that that is a growing demand from sponsors. So they've developed their commercial team over time. Now, there's a flip side to that. At the very start of our relationship with Sky, we weren't as good at dealing with assets as we should be, so we've strengthened our team. So there's a capability has grown on both sides, but both from sponsors and from the teams. Now, I suggested to one senior official in a team that he might want to recruit someone with that commercial experience, and he sort of jumped down my throat somewhat and said he couldn't even afford all these riders, let alone afford a commercial guy. But how do you break that cycle? If you get the right commercial backing, the right commercial expertise within your team, then you can start to generate revenue and afford the riders. So, but cycling is so locked in this whole thing of, let us do our thing, we're experts at cycling, and the sponsors will show up at the end like some fairy godmother and write a check out. Sky get hammered for their so-called marginal gains approach and how it's all full of puff and whatever. But actually, for me, the most remarkable thing about Team Sky is nothing to do with the riding edge of it. It's to do behind the scenes how they've modelled the commercial approach of people like Man United and Real Madrid. So that, for me, is the key to the success. Not that they can sign Thomas and Bernal and Froome because of the work done behind the scenes. Not the work done on the road. And everyone touts around 25, 35 million coming from Sky. But actually, if you go right back to the beginning of the deal, it was very modest money. And they've earned the extra cash as it's come along. This wasn't always a 35 million deal. And again, you go to the back room, they're just much more professional. I was asked a question yesterday, if Team Sky was to disappear completely, would you back a world team tour next year, in 2020? And my answer was, we don't know. We really don't know. We know we'll sponsor Manchester United for as long as we possibly can, but I don't know if we would do another world tour team if Team Sky were to evaporate, because we can't see anywhere else the same kind of commercial nous that will give us a return. And I think that's a really fundamental issue in cycling. We go through the mythical TV rights. I'll tell you how much I pay for TV rights, and it's not going to buy inner tubes for a pro team for a year. There's this thing about ASO should distribute their profits around the cycling teams. Well, ASO's more than the Tour de France, so if you look at their P&L, even if they halve their profits for the Tour de France, it's not going to move the dial for most pro teams. It will be a handy piece of money, but there are these myths that keep revolving around cycling, TV rights, ASO ponying up the money. I read something this morning in the press, event organisers are making a lot of money. I'm not sure I can find a rich event owner. So we need to get beyond all these sort of worn out cliches.
So that was Stephen Moon, who's the chief executive at Science and Sport, and had some very interesting points to make, especially about this assumption that some of us make in the media and perhaps teams themselves make, that sponsorship is still about selling space on a jersey and using the riders essentially as advertising boards. And you know, he was very forcefully making the point that that's not how modern sponsorship can work.
I think this is a wider point about any kind of sponsorship, which is that engagement is more important than just being wallpaper. A team being in the break every day on the TV, just a logo and a jersey riding up the road, what more is that really doing? It's providing eyeballs, you know, people are seeing that, but what beyond that, what value is there? And I think that, you know, that's that our kind of thinking is always influenced by when the small teams go up the road, we think, oh, they're good, delivering great value for their sponsors. And people are signing up for Cofidis loans as a result. I mean,
it's interesting, isn't it? I don't know if you can divorce the performance on the road with the aims of the sponsor, but you know, if you're Wanty Group Gobert, for example, going into the Tour de France, you want a story written about the team. Well, they were the escape artists, weren't they? We did a kilometre zero on, and that was the narrative that built up around that team. They were in the breakaway every day. Whether that aligned with what the sponsor wanted, it certainly got the team attention. I'm loath to use the word publicity, but attention, and it got people talking about them in a certain way. And again, you know, I don't know whether that fits with what the companies who are sponsoring the team want from it, but maybe it is.
But this is the other thing. Every company that's sponsoring a cycling team, whether they are the title sponsor or the secondary sponsor or the space on the back of the shorts, they've all got their own reasons for being in those spaces. Some will be, you know, budgetary, we can afford this amount. Some will be because the team values align with their values, and some will be because they're just somebody in that company who likes cycling, I guess.
I mean, we've seen one of the impacts of Team Sky has been an increase in personnel in teams. This is something that Marc Sargeant mentioned earlier, that, you know, he used to look around and see all these people with Team Sky branded clothing on, didn't know what they did. One ways in which we've seen the organisation of professional cycling teams change over the last few years has been the appearance and the proliferation of the press officer. When we started covering the sport, a lot of teams didn't have one. Now World Tour teams typically have three. There's almost an argument to be made, and I think we're moving towards this, for every team to have a kind of on-race, on-site sort of marketing sponsorship liaison manager. And this is something that I think I can envisage happening, to make sure on a daily basis that the team is sending out the message that the sponsor wants. And I think now a lot of the press officers are kind of covering that role or trying to tick those boxes, but in some cases the press officers are just doing what press officers have always done, make sure that the newspapers are getting their pound of flesh, and then, you know, they're slightly more aware now of social media. But from what Stephen Moon was saying, and also from conversations I had with Bora Hansgrohe, who are one of the, at the moment at least, one of the more successful organisations, I can see cycling or needing to move in that direction, because as Ralph Denk, the manager of Bora Hansgrohe, told me last week, they see themselves as a sports marketing company more than a sports team now, and that's what they have to be. If the model is going to continue to be this and the teams rely on corporate entities, then they're going to have to start getting very, very savvy about how to deliver more value, which in a way that I don't think they do now. And you know, another line that's been trotted out for years and years is what great value professional cycling is, and you know, you look at the figures involved and it's no longer that cheap. If you think about £25 to £30 million for a year of sponsorship for Team Sky, well, you mentioned Arsenal earlier, thank you for that, Lionel. The sponsorship of the Arsenal shirt and sponsorship naming rights for the stadium comes to about £30 million a year, about the same as Team Sky. And
they're a soccer club.
And they're a soccer club. And you look at the global audience of Premier League football games. But again, it's not just about the number of people watching, hearing the name, seeing the logo. It's about more than that nowadays.
I think the reason we're having this discussion is because there's a sort of, you mentioned panic earlier, Daniel, there's not a lot of confidence, and we heard from the team managers as well, that another sponsor will come along to take over the most successful team in the sport. And I guess people will read into that there is a problem with the model. It's an important test, this, maybe, for the sport, and perhaps there will be a kind of rebalancing, as Jonathan Vaughters has suggested. Perhaps Sky were overpaying, perhaps their budget was too high, and that the budgets will come back down to 15 to 20 million, and those teams will be able to all compete to try and win the biggest prize.
Yeah, I think the price is going to be the biggest factor. As I said before, Sky stretched those boundaries and everyone else has been trying to keep up. They pushed salaries up, or they've helped to push salaries up, and everything has got more expensive. And so it's not necessarily that... If somebody doesn't come in as a like-for-like replacement for Sky, that doesn't necessarily mean that the whole sport is broken. That was the point I was trying to make. Because somebody might say, well, we just cannot afford that because it's just too much of an annual commitment.
I think one effect that it will have on a sporting level in terms of the riders is that whether they do or they don't secure a new sponsor, much like last year with BMC, the sort of sword of Damocles was over BMC's neck. There was a lot of anxiety, there was a lot of panic, there was a lot of uncertainty, and prices were driven down as a result of the fact there was potentially going to be one less team, but also because of that anxiety. And I think if I was a rider and my contract was up at the end of 2019, I would want to make sure that I hit the ground running in 2019 and was in conversations with new teams very early in the year, at the end of the spring, because we see more and more that a lot of deals, the big deals in particular, are secured at the Giro now rather than at the Tour or around about that time of year. And I think there are going to be a lot of riders, if they leave it late and if they don't get results early in the season, they're going to be quite nervous when it comes to August and
but
September.
Once again, the peloton is the jungle, and the biggest, most powerful beast in the jungle will be fine. The money that will be available for Kwiatkowski, or you know, even Geraint Thomas on a, you know, perhaps a shorter term deal, or Chris Froome on a shorter term deal, that's not really going to be in jeopardy. It's the ripple effect as the wave goes down through, and riders who will be making way for those marquee signings.
Sky's team at the Tour, presumably in support of Froome, they will all be okay regardless of whether the team carries on, and probably they will all know their futures by the time the Tour starts. The Giro in support of Bernal might be a slightly different story. You know, that could be a slightly different scenario.
But that's always been the
course,
case, hasn't it?
It's not always been the case for Sky. And what we have seen from them over the years is this incredible unity you know, collective strength, and that might not be quite the same next year.
We should
leave it there, because we're going to go and have a Christmas lunch, chaps.
Oh, lovely,
aren't we? This is our last podcast before Christmas, because Christmas is next Monday.
Tuesday. Have we not got an episode going out on Christmas Eve?
Oh, right. Okay. Sorry. Apologies.
Sorry. On the server.
Oh, you're right. It's Tuesday.
The X episode. The episode where, I don't know, all our secrets are revealed. I don't know what it's going to be.
No, it's actually it's Christmas drinks with Dan Lloyd.
Looking forward to that. Before we go, our friends scheme for 2019 has been launched. It's available. Our diaries from the Giro d'Italia are out. Orla's diary from the women's tour is going to be out this week. The Tour de France diary will be out very soon, and it'll be followed by the Vuelta diary, all coming over the festive period. Thanks very much to everybody who signed up as a friend for 2019. You can do so at thecyclingpodcast.com. It's still £15 minimum price. You can pay a bit more if you want to support our work. If you pay the maximum amount, £100, you will be able to suggest ideas next year to be a guest editor, as we did, that we trialed that this year. It worked very well. How to Retire episode was suggested by listener Stephen Harris. Thank you very much to him and to all of you who support us through as a friend of the podcast. And yeah, as I say, thecyclingpodcast.com to sign up. So I'll leave it to Lionel to say Merry Christmas to you next week. But Merry Christmas from me.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas from Daniel. Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
You have been listening to The Cycling Podcast. Buy our exclusive clothing line made by Rafa at rafa.cc or by clicking on shop at thecyclingpodcast.com. This episode was edited and produced by Alex Adie.